On Midwest Week, what it's like to be black in the QCA. I'm Herb Trix, and my guest this week is Liz Boardman, city editor of the Quad City Times and Dispatch Argus. In recent weeks, the Times and Dispatch Argus have been running articles under the title Black in the QCA, and Liz, what prompted you all to do that?
You know, after the George Floyd killing, I think there was a national discussion began, and certainly when we saw the not just one protest, but weeks of protests that were drawing hundreds of people, that we certainly had a conversation about, what should we do to further this conversation and to really reflect the whole community, not just, a part of the community. And we do recognize that over the course of, the 200 odd years that the Times has been around and the 170 or so for the Dispatch, maybe we have not, or we certainly have not done as good a job as we could have in reflecting the entire community. So it was just a kind of our first steps toward trying to fix that.
Okay. And how are you doing it exactly? How have you found the people that have been featured in your various stories?
Well, we started by having conversations, which certainly COVID made a little bit more difficult. We'd hoped to have some community conversations, but that was just sort of impossible. But so we started reaching out to black churches and to black thought leaders that, people are familiar with in the community, and asking them, who do you think we should talk to? And then some of them were just, people we've met through reporting in the past, or people that we know in our personal lives, that's where we started. Mm-hmm. And then it did sort of grow from there, that once we started making those connections, people were calling us saying, hey, I'd like to be in on this too.
And you seem to have focused just on having people tell their story as opposed to, reciting statistics or things like that.
We did. That was a choice. One recognition was we are an entirely white newsroom. And we thought that we'd be better, that it was the people we were telling stories of were best served by letting them tell their stories in their own words rather than us reporting it, because there is always, that chance that your own perspective might change something that they meant some other way, just because we have such very different perspectives. So we wanted to just let their words stand as for themselves, which we thought was important. We also wanted to take a look at we looked at some statistics, we looked at the history, we looked at or discussed some issues with some thought leaders that are kind of the future, people who seem to be the up and coming in the black community too for the final. But we thought that at least to get started, we ought to just let the black community speak for itself.
Now, one of the intriguing ones, at least for me, was a young woman in one of the stories who talked about racism being more obvious in the South and not so obvious up here. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. That I think it certainly still exists. It might just be a little more covered up by Midwest Nice.
You mean we're equally as racist, just quieter about it, something like that?
I wouldn't necessarily. I'm not going to say equally, but people are people, and people have their prejudice. And I think it's certainly not. It certainly still exists here.
Now, what person so far or people have you found the most interesting, or most compelling, or unfortunately most painful to read about?
One of the most painful for me was for a personal reason. The Reverend Grimes, who's a very respected minister in Moline, with a PhD, talked about when he was in the second grade, when he was in kindergarten, his teacher said to him with his parents during a parent-teacher conference that he was not college material. And just the thought of that at that young of an age, someone would have been typed that could have altered the entire course of his life, certainly in the classwork that he would have been shown or steered toward, he and his family chose to use that as a call to action rather than accepting it. And he tells a story about when he finished his undergraduate. He went on to get a PhD, but when he finished his undergraduate, he went back to visit the teacher who was then a second grade teacher at Audubon, which was where I went to school, and elementary in Rock Island. And to say to her, you know, thank you for saying that, because it inspired me to go get my college degree. And first, how he described her, I knew immediately it was my second grade teacher. And I certainly was never, ever told, you know, as a white middle class girl, that, you know, I was always, like, encouraged to think big and encouraged to think about college. And so that hit me very personally. And also that he took, that his family chose to take an optimistic and, you know, we're better than this, take the high road as a response, and that he used it to spur himself into college and into higher education. I have to think that I'm not sure I would have been that kind-hearted to her in retrospect.
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, I was impressed by the how he took the high road out of that.
Yeah, and one that stuck in my mind is just because it was something that was so sort of mundane and run-of-the-mill, but yet could be so painful for people, was a guy that some girls wrote in his yearbook that they would have liked to see more of him, but because they were different races, they couldn't.
Yeah, that definitely. And he was another one that was of my same age range, and that I remembered, you know, those kinds of conversations happening, and I hope it's not still the case. I hope that in part of this, we at least see that we have made some progress, if not as much as we'd like to have made.
Now, one of the articles you included in the story, Black in the QCA, actually did have a whole lot of statistics, as opposed to the other personal stories, and you talked about poverty, income, and home ownership, and what did you find out about all of that?
Right. We found that these were actually statistics that the United Way and St. Ambrose worked together to research. And they found in pretty much every major sector, blacks are at a disadvantage to their white peers. And whether it's income, there's tremendous income inequality, that the average income is about half for blacks what it is for whites, that even a single family or single parent families have the same sort of disparities, that they are far less likely to finish high school, and that a lot of those statistics show through, then they're less likely to have home ownership because, you know, they don't make as much money. And so everything kind of comes along, you know, they're certainly not going to be able to save for retirement in the way that somebody who makes twice as much is going to be able to do. That these gaps, the data really showed that the gaps start early and they stay with you for your entire life, which I thought was pretty eye-opening.
And one last thing, Liz, what sort of reaction have you had from readers, if anything? Are they following this closely or not?
Yes, actually, we've had a lot of feedback. Most of it, I would say the vast majority of it, is very positive. Again, people asking, well, hey, you know, could you interview me too? I have a story to tell. Or people who have said, you know, I'm white in the Quad Cities and I didn't really realize that this is what, you know, even my friends have experienced. In that way, it's been really, really heartening to see, like I said, overwhelmingly positive.